Reverend Shabaya, Chanukah Sameach, Chafel Chanukah. Today's shiur is dedicated, sponsored by Marcia Tukaziner in memory of her husband, Avram Yitzchak, Isaac Ben Akiva, Abe Tukaziner, and may all of the learning be Le'iloi Nishmato. I thought today we'd take a little break since it is Chanukah. I would talk about Chanukah, but consistent with the Minchas Chinuch structure, I want to deal with a halachic aspect of Chanukah rather than a purely agadic one, although maybe we'll get to some agadita a little later on. We know that the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos quotes a brisa that talks about multiple ways of fulfilling the Chanukah mitzvah. It's a very unusual mitzvah because you are given three ways of doing it. There is basic, there is enhanced, and then there is the enhanced of the enhanced. The basic mitzvah is quite surprising. All you have to do is light one candle for every night of Chanukah, no matter how many people in your home. So if I have a family of eight, according to the basic mitzvah, I light one candle, night one, and even on night eight, I only light one candle. Not counting the shamash, there's only eight candles you need to light during Chanukah. That is called basic. That is called ishu beso, and one fulfills the mitzvah. It's interesting that I've never heard of anybody to say, I just want to do the basic. Everyone goes beyond the halacha. If you want to be mahadrin, you want to do the mitzvah in a more beautiful way, so then there is the choice of lighting a candle for every member of your household. Now that means, once again, if I have eight people, night one, I light eight candles, and night eight, I light eight candles. Maybe that's confusing, because let's say I have six people, that means night one, I light six candles, night eight, I light six candles. It has nothing to do with the number of days. It is just kaminyan, anshei, beso. But then, if you want to do mahadrin, min ha-mahadrin, right? It sounds like the kosher restaurant system. Mahadrin, min ha-mahadrin. Although they don't have muhuderet in this category. So then we have the famous machlokes, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, where Beit Shammai says you go from eight, and you go down, and Beit Hillel says you start with one and you go up. And as is always the case, virtually always the case, in a machlokas, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, the halacha is according to Beis Hillel, and that is what we do. But again, one has to recognize that what we are doing is mahadrin min ha-mahadrin. It is not a requirement of the basic mitzvah. Now, the Beis Halevi, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's father, the Beis Halevi was really the first of the Soloveitchiks who became a world-famous gadol. The Beis Halevi in his Tshuvos raises the following question. Let us say that it's the sixth night of Chanukah and I only have five candles. Is it better for me to simply say, since I don't have Minyan Hayamim, I should go back to the basic? And let's assume my family is 10, so I don't have enough to either do Minyan Hayamim, nor can I even do the intermediate level of Anshei Beito. So what do I do? If I only have five candles, do I say, since I cannot be Mekayem, either the middle level of Anshei Beito, or the highest level of Minyan Hayamim, I should therefore go back to the basic halacha and only light one? Or is there a musag that you do as much as you can do? So even if you cannot do eight or seven or six, I do five, or whatever the number is, right? What do I do when I don't have enough candles? Now again, it's interesting, in our more or less affluent culture, one might say, well, you know, this is not really a big deal, buy more candles, buy more oil. Oil is better, of course. But you know, in Europe, where there was genuine poverty, and the emesis, even in Yerushalayim here, there is pockets of genuine poverty, these might be real questions. Can't afford another candle. So the question is, do you do as much as you can? Or do we take the position that if I cannot do the exact Minyan Hayamim, or Anshei Beito. Now I'm assuming that if you have enough candles for Anshei Beito, logic would indicate, even if I cannot do Minyan HaYamim, which is the highest level, I should at least do Minyan Anshei Beito. But assuming my candles are fewer than Minyan HaYamim and Minyan Anshei Beito, do I light whatever I have, or do I go back to the basic halacha? This is the Beis Halevi's question. So the Beis Halevi wants to say that this may depend on a machlokes, Tosfos, and the Rambam, how to learn the Gemara. And that is the following. I had mentioned two levels of Hidur that the Gemara tells us, right? The first level, the lower level of Hidur, is to light Kanshe Beso, and the highest level of Hidur is to demarcate the days, either according to Beit Shammai or according to Beis Hillel. Let's just go with Beis Hillel because that's the halacha. The question is this: if I want to do Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, do I also do Mahadrin? So for example, let's assume I have enough candles. Let's assume it is the eighth day of Hanukkah, and I have six people in my home. Do I just light eight candles? Or do we light 48 candles? Now this is a machlokas, the Rambam and Tosfos. Tosfos actually says, and again, I'll bring it up to the halacha because obviously it's very relevant to us. Tosos actually says, if you want to do the highest level of Minyan HaYamim, only one menorah should be lit. And you should not have many menorahs lit Kanshe Beso. And the reason that Tosos gives is, if the Hidur of Minyan HaYamim is to have an exact counting of the days, when you have 100 candles in the window, the passerby is not really going to see how many days of Hanukkah it is. They're going to see all sorts of candles. Therefore, Tosfos says, your choice is this. You either light Kanshe Beso, one candle, or if you want to do a Mahadrin and a Mahadrin, you only light one menorah. That is what Tosfos says. The Rambam argues, the Rambam says, that the highest level includes the intermediate level, and if you are lighting Kiminyan HaYamim, right, the number of days, you also have a menorah for each member of the household. Now there is a machlokes, exactly what does it mean, each member of the household? Does it include, for example, the girls of the household? Many opinions say yes. But even if it includes the girls of the household, does it include a husband and a wife lighting separately? That's a machlokes. Many say ishto kigufo, etc. Others say husband and wife should also light separately. But be it as it may, what's interesting is this. So the Rambam says, even if you're doing Kiminyan HaYamim, you also have Ka'anshe Beso. Toso says, if you're doing Minyan HaYamim, you do not have Ka'anshe Beso. Now, the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Kara, paradoxically, paskins like Tosos. Now let me explain why this is a highly unusual thing. When Rav Yosef Karo authored the Shulchan Aruch is actually a summary of a much, much longer work. That's the Beis Yosef, which was a commentary on the Torah, in which Rav Yosef Karo gives all the sources from the Gemaras and the Rishonim and any Achronim up to his generation. And going through all of the different shitos, the Beis Yosef is then machria, what the halacha is, and he put it in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, although Shulchan Aruch is a huge work, that's really because of the commentaries. If you took out all of the Meforshim on the Shulchan Aruch, and you took out the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch would actually be the size of the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch. In fact, it was intended to be a Kitzer. Rav Yosef Karo actually intended, amazingly, that the Shulchan Aruch, I don't mean the Kitzur, the entire Shulchan Aruch could be learnt in a month. Every month one would do a cycle of learning the whole Shulchan Aruch. Now, Rav Yosef Kara writes in the Hakdama to the Beis Yosef that his rule of thumb in deciding halacha, although there are many, he doesn't always follow this rule of thumb, but his rule of thumb was, there are many, many Rishonim, many, many Poskim. But he took three poskim as his guiding light. He took the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush, Rabbeinu Asher, and he essentially said, I'm going to go with a 2 out of 3 decision. Whenever you have 2 out of 3, that's going to be the halacha based on those three Gedolei HaPoskim. Now the problem is, this kind of stacks the deck, because the Rambam paskins like the Rif 95% of the time, and the odd man out is always the Rush. The Rush is always the odd man out. And thus, essentially, the Rambam and the Rif were, I mean, they weren't Sephardim, that's a bit of an anachronism, but they became identified as the Sephardic Poskim. Right, the Rif was in Morocco, and the Rambam was in Egypt, born in Spain, but lived most of his life in Egypt. So as a result, the Hachra'ot of the Shulchan Aruch do not take into account the Ashkenazic Psak of Germany, Poland, Russia, because the Rif and the Rambam represented the 2 out of 3 that he followed. Because of this, Rav Moshe Isserles, the Rama, who was a... their lives actually overlapped, but the Rama was much younger and really belonged to the immediate next generation. The Rama died very young. The Rama died before the age of 50. But the Rama added glosses to the Shulchan Aruch that reflects the Ashkenazic customs and halachos, which are from the school of Rashi, the Balei HaTosvos, and the Rush. And as you know, it is generally the case, therefore, that Sfardim, Eidut HaMizrach, they follow Rav Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch called the Mechaber, and Ashkenazim, by and large, follow the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, the Rama. There are a lot of exceptions. Even in Sfardim, there are a lot of exceptions. For example, many Moroccan kehilos actually embrace certain psukim of the Rama over Rav Yosef Karo, and Rav Adi Yosef waged an unrelenting war against the Moroccan kehilos. Again, Morocco had very, very chashuv rabbanim. Rav Shalom Misas, who had been the Rav Rashi in Yerushalayim here of the Sfardim, was a Moroccan, and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. Rav Avadya had I don't want to say enemies, they were all friends, but he had his ideological and halachic opponents within the Sephardic community, because Rav Avadya Yosef held ironclad that all Sephardim have to follow Rav Yosef Karo, when in fact there were the Moroccan kehilos that often followed the Rama. Rav Avadya claimed that this was because of the influence of Chabad, which was really a big insult to Morocco. He basically said, well, what happened was that the Moroccan kehilos were Amoratsim, and many of them were not religious, and then Chabad came to Casablanca in the 1930s and 40s and then 50s, and as a result educated a new generation of Moroccan Jews to follow Ashkenazic customs, and that is why they follow Ashkenazic customs, simply because Chabad taught them Ashkenazic customs. But they had been menatek, they had cut themselves away from the Sephardic Masorah. Well, just want to say that this was deeply, deeply insulting to the Moroccan Gedolim, and they basically showed that they had been following the Rama for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. It had nothing to do with Chabad, etc. But this is actually a big machlok. Rav Avadya Yosef actually wanted what you might call a pan-Sephardic, and as he wanted to unify all the Sephardic kehilos to follow only Rav Yosef Karo. On the other hand, the Moroccan, and actually to some degree even the Iranian, had different Masoras, but for different reasons. The Moroccan, I mean, again, mainly it was Rav Yosef Karo, but they had many, many cases where they followed the Rama. And the Iranian and Iraqi kehilot, they had a different problem. It wasn't so much the Rama, but because of the influence of the Arizal, they incorporated many Kabbalistic teachings that were not within the Hachra of the Shulchan Aruch, primarily through the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai, the beginning of the 20th century, was a great, great, he was really kind of the Vilna Gaon of the Sephardic world, a tremendous, tremendous Gaon. And the Ben Ish Chai did incorporate many, many, many of the Ari's Kabbalistic rulings, which were not accepted by the Shulchan Aruch. So these are kind of the two branches off, right? Mainstream Sephardic is Rav Yosef Karo, I'm simplifying, but Moroccan kehilos had many psukim of the Rama, and Iraqi and Iranian kehilos had many psukim of the Ben Ish Chai, and although Rav Avadia Yosef himself, his ancestry, is Iraqi, but he repudiated. In fact, it's very, very interesting. His very, very first teaching experience when he was 15 years old. So he was already, an aspiring young Talmud Chacham. So Rav Ezra Otia, who was the Rosh Hashiva of Parat Yosef, Rav Avadia's Rebbe, sent him to give a shiur between Mincha and Maariv in the Bukharim Shul, Bukharian Shul, in Ben Ish Chai. He would read Ben Ish Chai, and this was like, now the problem was, already at 15, he disagreed with a lot of things the Ben Ish Chai said, because it was Keneged the Mechaber. So he would sometimes, as a 15-year-old, he would sometimes insert comments that we shouldn't paskin like the Ben Ish Chai here. Well, that was considered to be treason. His life was almost in danger to some degree. These are like Balabatim. They were raised, they were raised from their earliest childhood, that the Ben Ish Chai was somebody that he was the one that was the ultimate authority. You don't fight with the Ben Ish Chai. Here is this 15-year-old saying that the Ben Ish Chai is wrong, etc. So Rav Ezra Otia had to intervene to kind of give him protection and security and everything else. Okay, but now this was a digression, although it's interesting to understand that for Ashkenazim, we think, I know the Sephardim were too, but those of us who are Ashkenazim sometimes think the Sephardic world is monolithic, right? In fact, there are many interesting differences within the world of Sephardim, just as there are with Ashkenazim, Russian Jews, Polish Jews, Lithuanian Jews, etc. Now, the reason why I mention this is the following. Hanukkah is a very, very unusual example, the Taz points out, of Psak Halacha. Because I mentioned to you a machlokes, Tosfos and the Rambam, that according to Tosfos, if you are doing Mahadrin, Minha Mahadrin, so only one menorah is lit, because otherwise the days are confused. According to the Ramban, if you're doing Mahadrin and a Mahadrin, you include the middle level of Anshe Beso, and you have many menorahs that are lit. We would expect, based on the normal rules, that Rav Yosef Karo would paskin like the Ramban, and Rav Moshe Ishalis, the Ramah, would paskin like Tosfos. In fact, we have here a very interesting reversal. Rav Yosef Karo actually paskins like Tosfos, that only one menorah should be lit, and this is actually the minhag of Sfardim who follow the Mechaber. If you follow the author of the Shulchan Aruch, you only light one menorah every night, only one menorah, nobody else lights. The Ramah, on the other hand, seems, because you'll see it's a little ambiguous, seems to follow the Rambam's view, which is unusual, because the Ramah paskins, everybody should light a menorah kiminyan hayamim. Now again, the Ramah does not address husbands and wife, as I indicated, there are two minhagim for that, but he does say all of the children should have their own menorah. Now, when I say the Ramah seemingly follows the Rambam, it's important to point out it is not exactly the same as the Rambam. The Rambam says the Baal HaBayit lights for Anshe Beso. So if I have six children, and myself, and putting aside the issue of lighting for husband and wife, the Rambam says, I light seven menorahs. That's what the Rambam says. The Ramah does not say that. The Ramah says each member of the household should light their own menorah. Now that itself is very, very interesting. Where did the Ramah get that? Now, let me mention another bibliographical detail that is significant. The Shulchan Aruch gives you laws, but never gives you sources. If you want to know the sources, you technically have to go to the Beis Yosef, and that'll give you the sources. Shulchan Aruch does not give you sources. Nevertheless, later books or later compilations do give you the sources. So, for example, if you're learning Shulchan Aruch, you'll see a little letter by every halacha, and then you go to the margin, and you will be given a source. And the one that gives you the sources is a commentary. Actually, it's not a commentary, it's just the citations, is a sefer called Be'er HaGola. Ber HaGolah was actually the Vilna Gaon's grandfather. That what he did was, he annotated the entire Shulchan Aruch, all four parts of the Shulchan Aruch, in which every single statement he will tell you. It is from the Rambam, it is from the Tor, it is from the Rush, it is from Tosos, it is from the Ramban. Or if it's simply directly from the Gemara, it's from Masechet Shabbos, you know, Daf Chaf. This is called Be'er HaGolah. And it's very, very important. Be'er HaGolah basically gives you the makor for every law in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, for some reason, the Be'er HaGolah did not provide his service in the Ramah. He only provided his service for the Mechaber. But in the Ramah, you seem to have the source material in the Ramah itself. Because when the Ramah makes a statement, remember, the Ramah is written in Rashi script. That's just the printing convention. But the Ramah is printed in Rashi script. In the Ramah, you will actually have parentheses. The Ramah will say, our minog is not to follow, you know, the Mechaber. And there'll be a parentheses. And the parentheses is going to say, Mina Rambam, Mina Tor, Maharil, etc. So, again, this is a bit of bibliography, but it's actually important to know. Most people assume that the Ramah himself, see, unlike the Be'er HaGolah, which is outside of the Shulchan Aruch, the parentheses are in the Ramah. So most people assume the Ramah himself provided his sources. The Ramah himself is telling you, in parentheses, this is my source. You need to know that is actually not true. The Ramah did not write sources in his work. This was provided by some anonymous, we don't even know who they were, but over the centuries, this was provided by anonymous editors, proofreaders, and the like. Now, the reason why it's important to know that is, just because the parenthesis says, this is the Ramah's source, doesn't automatically mean it's the Ramah's source, because the Ramah didn't say, that is my source. In fact, I'm going to show you that this is actually a good example. When the Ramah says, like the Mechaber says, only one menorah is lit, the Ramah says, everybody should light their own menorah. Parentheses says, Rambam. Closed parentheses. In other words, it is stated in the Ramah that the source for the Ramah's psak that everybody lights is the Rambam. But, Aliba DMS, that is not true. Because the Rambam does not say everybody lights. The Rambam says the Baal HaBayit lights enough menorahs for everybody. The Ramah is a different view. Now I'll discuss shortly where did the Ramah get it from. But the Ramah did not base it on the Rambam per se. The Ramah based it on a... Well, we'll get to what the Ramah did base it on. But you see that the point I'm making is that bibliography is somewhat important. In a work like the Shulchan Aruch, you're going to see numerous parentheses, footnotes, asterisks, stars, circles. It's very hard to follow because there's so many commentaries over the years that, you know, you'll see all sorts of markings and squiggles and you're not going to know where to go. Besides the fact that the print is excruciatingly small. That's why the new Shulchan Aruchs, they are really wonderful things because, number one, they've separated the commentaries. So, for example, so instead of having 30 commentaries on a page, they will actually print the Shulchan Aruch in two blocks, meaning they'll print the Shulchan Aruch with 15 commentaries, and then in the second half of the book, they'll reprint the Shulchan Aruch with 15 commentaries. So you kind of have a much cleaner page, and they also kind of clean up the squiggles and the asterisks and the stars and the numbers and the letters to be able to make sense of it. Okay. Alrighty. Now, remember, this was a long segue to go back to the Beis HaLevi. This is what the Beis HaLevi says. The Beis HaLevi says, what emerges from Tosfos is, since Tosfos says that you have to light in a way that we clearly know the number of days, that's why he said you don't light Kan Shei Beito, because that would throw off the count. Tosfos is very concerned that Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin be a clear indicator to the person walking outside how many days of Hanukkah there is. So based on Tosfos' reasoning, it would stand to reason that if you don't have enough candles to cover the exact number of days, it makes no sense to light five, because the passerby will not see from your lighting Kiminyan Hayamim. So if you learn like Tosfos, that only one menorah is lit, that logic would indicate you don't light five candles on the sixth night, you only light one candle, because if you're not going to be able to do the Hidur of Minyan Hayamim, you go back to square one. On the other hand, if I go like the Rambam or the Ramah, who basically say that we don't really care if passersby get confused or not, the Beis Halevi wants to suggest it's better to have five than to have one. So he wants to say, therefore, according to his analysis, Sfardim, if you have five candles and it's the sixth night of Chanukah, you should only light one candle. Ashkenazim might well be Marbe or. Now, he then goes one step further and he wants to say that the Machlokes, Tosfos and the Rambam may actually be a Machlokes in the Gemara itself. Because like this. Let's go back to the Machlokes in the Gemara itself, which is the Machlokes Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, right? Beis Shammai says you go down, Beis Hillel says you go up. The Gemara then proceeds to give us two explanations for the Machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Explanation number one actually doesn't seem like much of an explanation, but it simply says, according to Beis Shammai, the lighting of the Chanukah menorah should correspond to the number of days that are coming towards you. Meaning on day one, including the day that you're in, I have 8 days coming towards me. By day eight, I only have my last day. So you look at the Yamim Habaim, the days that are coming. I'll explain why that's so. Beis Hillel looks at the days that have passed, including the day that you're in. So day one, only 1 day has passed. Day eight, 8 days have passed. Now that's reason number one. Now reason number one doesn't seem to be much of a reason. It just seems to be stating what they're saying. So Rav Shlomo Yosef Seven, great Talmud Chacham and an exquisite Hebrew stylist. He's someone that his svarim are very, very classic. Moedim Bahalacha, Ishim Vishitos, really wonderful. He was the founding editor of the Encyclopedia Talmudis, and he was a person, really, who lived in so many worlds with a great deal of richness. He was a Chabad person. He knew Rav Kook very well. He was close to Rav Kook. He was close to the Brisker Rav. I mean, he was close to Gedolim, who were on the opposite side of the spectrum. And he was a tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham. In fact, for many, many years, I mean, it was just amazing. He would write book reviews of Svarim. And he would write book reviews. He would read Svarim, very intricate Svarim, the way we might read a novel, a John Grisham novel or something of that. I mean, he would read a dense 600-page book of Shelos Tshuvos. And he would write a book review for the newspaper. He would write a book review saying, this is very good, but this person didn't know the Yushalmi here and the Tosefta here, and he forgot a passage in the Zohar, and he didn't know that the Chassam Sefer discusses this very question. Just phenomenal. But in be it as it may, Rev Zevin has an essay in which he discusses the different approaches of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel to Halacha. Now all of us know as a general rule, Beis Shammai is strict and Beis Hillel is lenient. But when you get to a discussion like Chanukah, whether you start with eight and go down, or start with one and go up, that seems not to have anything to do with strict or lenient. So Rav Zevin goes back a little bit and says there's actually a more fundamental distinction between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And that is, Beit Shammai is an idealist and Beis Hillel is a realist. Beit Shammai looks at the potentiality that the world could have. Now the Gemara tells us originally Hashem wanted to create the world with Midat Hadin, strict justice. That was Hashem's ideal, that the world should be on strict justice, Bereshit bara Elokim. Elokim is midat hadin. Ra, Hashem saw she'ein ha'olam miskayem, that the world could not survive on pure justice. Every time you do an aveira, the lightning comes out and strikes you dead. And therefore Hashem combined rachamim and din. And that is why initially the Chumash says Bereshis bara Elokim midas hadin. Then later it says biyom asos Hashem Elokim. Hashem is Yud Kei Vav Kei Eretz V'Shamayim. So Rav Zevin wants to say, now again, you have to understand, this is not a conscious manipulation. It's not that Beis Shammai got up every morning and said, as a yeshiva, we're going to be mean today. How strict can we be? And Beis Hillel got up and said, okay, what halachas can I be lenient? It's not that way. We have to believe that at least the great chachamim are objective. They are trying to look at the truth as they see it. But the way you see truth is based on the root of your soul. Your spiritual identity perceives truth a certain way. Beis Shammai's neshama, again, Beis Shammai, of course, was a school. It's not Shammai, but Beis Shammai, the academy founded by Shammai. The root of their neshama was in the ideal world that God wanted to create, the potentiality in Bria. And that was Midat Hadin. And that led him to see halacha in a stricter way. Beis Hillel's neshama was rooted in the spiritual nature of the world Hashem actually created, which was a shutfus, a combination of din and rachamim, which is why Beis Hillel is lenient. That is why the Arizal says, when Mashiach comes and the world graduates to a higher level of perfection, the halacha will be according to Beit Shammai. That is what the Arizal writes. So, it turns out, we can look at it this way, Rav Zevin says. Beit Shammai emphasizes koach, the potentiality of what the world could have been. Beis Hillel emphasizes poel, what the world actually became. So based on this, we can now look at the Hanukkah story in the same light. If Beis Shammai looks at potentiality, then when we give thanks for Hashem's miracle, we look at it in terms of potential. So, on day one, although we didn't know it yet, there was in that oil 8 days of burning potential, because the nature of the miracle was Hashem made the oil slow burning. So on day one, the koach of the oil was 8. By day 8, the koach of the oil was only 1. Beis Shammai looks at koach. We look at what is the potentiality that God put into the universe here. The koach diminishes with the passage of time. Beis Hillel, who looks at realization, actualization, it's going to go up, because mitzad what we perceive, day one we perceive 1 day's burning, day two we see 2 days burning. In other words, Rav Zevin's brilliant insight is that the machlokas by Hanukkah, which has nothing to do with leniency and stringency, can actually be connected to the general gisha in the approaches of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Right? This is an example of the type of analysis that Rav Zevin does. Not related to this, let me just mention another very classic article he wrote. He wrote Mishpat Shylock Laor Halacha. And if you know the Merchant of Venice and the deal that Shylock made, kind of a medieval liposuction, that if Antonio does not pay the debt, he will give a pound of flesh. So Rav Zevin discusses whether such chozim would be enforceable according to halacha. Right. He concludes it would not be, so don't worry about it. But he goes through the different shitos in that particular issue. Okay. Now that is reason number one the Gemara gives. Beis Shammai looks at koach, Beis Hillel looks at poel, as Rav Zevin explains. Then the Gemara gives reason number two for Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And that is, Beis Shammai says, the reason we go down, this is reason number two, the reason we go down is because we follow the Parei HaChag. We follow the bulls, the additional offerings that were brought on Sukkos. On Sukkos, the korbanot that were brought, at least the musafim, the bulls that were brought as additional offerings, were brought in a descending order. Day 1, 13, right? Day 2, 12, etc. And they add up to 70. They're the 70 nations of the world. So Beis Shammai says, Neros of Hanukkah follow the Karbanos of Sukkot. Now that's a bit of an enigma. Why would it follow the Karbanos of Sukkot? We'll come back to that. But Beis Hillel says, and here the reason of Beis Hillel seems to be simple, Malin Bakodesh, in holy matters, we go up. We don't go down. Now, factoring out for a moment, I'll go back to Beis Shammai because it's interesting, but factoring out Beis Shammai, let's just focus on Beis Hillel. It turns out we have two reasons for Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel, just Beis Hillel. One is, you want to commemorate the actualization of the perceived miracle, that on day one we saw one day of lighting, day eight we saw 8 days, meaning Yamim Hayotzim. And the second reason of Beis Hillel, not Beis Shammai, is Malin Bakodesh. The Beis Halevi wants to say that when Tosfos was so concerned that we don't mess up the days, that's why only one person lights, we don't mess up the days, that is based on the first reason, that the purpose of lighting is Yamim Hayotzim, to be able to know the days. But like the second reason, that you just want to increase the light every day, maybe it's less important if people don't know the exact day, because the Iker is to be Mosif. So the Beis Halevi wants to say that the Machlokes Tosfos and the Rambam might actually be a Machlokes which reason of Beis Hillel in the Gemara do we follow. Tosfos follows the first reason of Beis Hillel. If the first reason of Beis Hillel is Yamim, Keneged HaYamim, that is why Tosfos is concerned that not too many menorahs be lit, because you won't have the Yamim. But the Rambam is concerned with the second reason, Ma'alin Bakodesh. As a result, we're less concerned if people will not be able to know the days. So it turns out, according to the Beis Halevi, we have a chain of three links in which things are connected. If you follow the first reason of the Gemara, in Beis Hillel, I'll go back, Beis Shammai is parenthetical here because we don't paskin like Beis Shammai. I will go back to Beis Shammai in a moment. But if you follow the first reason of Beis Hillel, Yamim Hayotzim, then two halachic consequences are going to follow. Consequence number one, you will follow Tosfos's view that only the Balabayas lights one menorah, not many menorahs, because you'll then throw off the Minyan HaYamim. Consequence number two is the Beis Halevi's rule. If it's the sixth night of Chanukah and I only have 5 candles, I don't light 5 because that's not Minyan HaYamim, and therefore I revert back to the basic law of 1. If, on the other hand, the Beis Halevi says, I follow the second reason of the Gemara, Ma'alin Bakodesh, then, number one, I will follow the Rambam that says you light for everybody, and we don't really care if it throws off the count. And number two, in the opposite problem, when I only have 5 candles for the sixth night, I will still light 5, because even if I can't go up from the preceding day, at least I shouldn't go down. So, you see what the Beis Halevi did. Beis Halevi is taking the two reasons of the Gemara, and depending on which reason you consider to be decisive, we'll have these two halachic consequences. So, according to the Beis Halevi, it would turn out the following. If you're Ashkenazic, and you follow the Ramah, that everybody lights. So we're not concerned with confusion of days. It should stand to reason, in the opposite case, if I only have five candles on the sixth night, I should light five candles, if you follow the Rambam. Now, there is a problem with the whole Beis Halevi's Pilpul, and that is, the Mishnah Berurah, of course, I mean, the Beis Halevi could certainly, I mean, the Beis Halevi was before the Chafetz Chaim, or the, at least an older, very older contemporary. So it's not a problem if the Beis Halevi argues with the Mishnah Berurah. He certainly can argue with the Mishnah Berurah. But I just want to point out that the Mishnah Berurah apparently did not accept the Beis Halevi's structure, because the Mishnah Berurah paskins like the Ramah, and the Mishnah Berurah says, Beferish, if you only have five candles on the sixth night of Hanukkah, you only light one candle. So the Beis Halevi's intricate structure was apparently not accepted by the Chafetz Chaim. But again, this is what the Beis Halevi says. Okay, now again, as I say, this Shaila you probably will not face, because Baruch Hashem, we live in Rav Chus and the like. But let me go back a little bit to Beis Shammai. Again, it's not Mahalacha. The Beis Shammai, in the first explanation, was he looks at potentiality, not an actualization. But the second reason for Beis Shammai really throws us for a loop a little bit. What on earth do the Parim of Sukkos have to do with Neiros Chanukah? Why should the Parim of Sukkos determine the trajectory of how you light the Neiros of Chanukah? It's kind of a bit of a mystery. So I'm going to give you two explanations. One is an academic scholarly explanation, and the other is a Hasidish explanation. The academic scholarly explanation, which I think may actually have some truth, is based on a passage in the book of the Maccabees, Sefer HaMaccabim. Now, the Sefer HaMaccabim is not part of Tanakh, of course. It is what is called the Apocrypha, or as Chazal call it, Svarim Chitzonim. But it is considered, even by Chazal, well, Chazal themselves, in the Mishnah and Gemara, these books are not quoted at all. The only apocryphal book that is ever mentioned is the book of Ben Sira, which is similar to Mishlei. But the Rishonim, there's no question, Rashi, Ramban, they did consider the Sefer HaMaccabim or the Sefer Chashmonaim, it goes by different names, to at least be a reliable historical book. It's not a holy book. It's not part of Tanakh, but it's not a book of Kefira either. And the Rishonim did consider the book of the Maccabees to be a reliable historical source. And the book of Maccabees, there are actually four books of the Maccabees, but three and four are not really about the Maccabees, they're really later. But one and two are the account of the uprisings against Antiochus, and there's a lot of repetition, but also inconsistencies between them. They were written at different times. In the book of the Maccabees too, it says the following idea: that the holiday of Chanukah was established when we regained the Beis HaMikdash after a 3-year struggle with the Yavanim. The holiday of Chanukah was established because that year, the major festival of the year was Sukkos, because Sukkos was 8 days, Sukkos and Shemini Atzeres. And that year they couldn't celebrate Sukkos because the Beis HaMikdash, or they couldn't bring the Korbanos of Sukkos, because the Beis HaMikdash was in the hands of the Yavanim. So the people decided that the festival of Chanukah that they made would be a surrogate and a substitute for the 8 days of Sukkot. And it is recorded in the book of the Maccabees that people took lulav and esrog during that Chanukah season to connect it to Sukkot. Now, Chazal nowhere refer to this, because from a halachic standpoint, it's an absurdity. From a halachic standpoint, you cannot make up Sukkos by doing it a week later. Not a week later, by doing it a month and a half later. So Chazal considered this to be a folk behavior that was amaratzis, and therefore it was not given any credence and any sanction. People did things. People do all sorts of things. and just because people did it, Chazal considered it to be a minah bor, and they didn't even. What is there's a great German expression. It's called killing by silence. I think it's called Schweigtaten or Tattenschweig, one of those German words. That sometimes the way you kill an idea is simply by not even referring to it. So they didn't even want to refute it. But the academic comment is the following. Sometimes, and Dr. Rabbi Daniel Sperber writes about this a lot, sometimes even archaic minhagim that were not halachically proper, they managed to pop out in different corners like a fly trapped in amber. So one might say that this would have been the minhag in which the lights of Hanukkah correspond to the sacrificial cycle of Sukkos. This may have started off as a folk behavior to kind of connect Hanukkah to Sukkos based on the passage in the book of the Maccabees. So this might be, possibly, the only remez in rabbinic literature to the passage in the book of the Maccabees that Hanukkah was connected to Sukkos. That would be the academic explanation. Now let me give you the Hasidic explanation, which is a thought of the Sfas Emes. All of us know, we remember this from Sukkos. Yeah.
Just before you go on, but that would be then Beit Shammai.
That's only Beit Shammai, which we don't pass like anyway. So according to Beis Hillel, we don't even have that. But it could very well be that Beit Shammai's practice was a remnant of that old vestigial memory. Sometimes things survive, and we don't even know why they survived. But they may survive being connected to that historical context. Again, it's quite interesting, because that is what the book of the Maccabees 2 says, even though, as I say, Chazal just ignored it. They didn't even bother to refute it. It's actually similar to Rav Chaim Ozer. Rav Chaim Ozer, when electricity came out, so he was asked to write a tshuva that it's usher to turn on an electric light on Shabbos. He refused to write a tshuva because he said the following: even if I write that it's usher, people will say, this is a mentality of, oh, if Rav Chaim Ozer had to spend 10 pages saying that it's usher, that really means there's a real basis to say that it's mutter. This is actually how people feel. People say, why did you have to write 100 pages to say that it's usher if it's so obvious? So he said, it has to be so obvious that I'm not even going to write a tshuva that it's usher and the like. There is such a mentality sometimes. The longer somebody has to write why something's usher, people say, oh, that means it's really mutter. Okay. Anyway, so all of us know that the korbanos of Sukkos add up to 70. And Chazal tell us that the 70 corresponds to the 70 nations of the world that want to destroy us. Now granted, the UN has more than 70 nations because a lot of these nations split up, but it's still true, they all want to destroy us, but now it's a little more than 70, but they come back.
They're
machmer, right. Right. Want to be my hijra mitzvah, right. Right, and the like. Now, why do the parim go down? So the Vilna Gaon explains, because as we approach the Geula, the power of these nations will get weaker and weaker and weaker. And even though you'll ask, well, wait a second, we seem to see the opposite. We see the upsurge of terrorism and ISIS and all of the, you know, all of the things that for years, you know, the world seems to be getting worse and worse, but the Gra would say these are the death throes of evil before its final downfall. The candle has one last burst of energy before it goes out. A human soul, sometimes right before a person dies, there's one last push. And therefore, as bad as things are, this is the, now we don't know how long it'll take, but this is the death throes, the gesisa of the kochos of evil. So the Parei HaChag represents the diminishing of external evil as we approach Geula. That's why it goes down. So here's what the Sfas Emes says. If the Parei HaChag represents the fight against external evil, the Neros of Chanukah represent our own neshamas. And how do we rectify our own neshamas? Because the evil outside of us can only be defeated by eradicating the evil that is within us. There is an evil within us, whatever it might be, the Yetzer Hara, Gaiva, jealousy, Taiva, Kavav, all of these negatives. And these negatives within us make us vulnerable. And they give koach, spiritually, to the evil outside of us. And therefore, as we eradicate the evil within, the evil outside gets weakened automatically. So the question becomes, when you look at fire as a tool of purification, there are two images that you can summon up. Fire is that which eradicates and destroys, and fire is that which illuminates and gives warmth. Which aspect of fire are you focusing on as a tikkun for my own neshama, Ner Hashem Nishmatatam? Beit Shammai focuses on fire as a symbol for that which burns and destroys the evil within. So therefore Beit Shammai says, I connect it to the Parim of Sukkot, just as the bulls of Sukkot go down because the power of external evil gets weakened as we approach Geula. So too in my own internal Tikkun HaNefesh, I look at the evil within me and I burn it away with tshuva. And hopefully, therefore, that'll be a downward trajectory. I start off with eight things I got. In other words, if a person is focusing on the tshuva of eradicating the bad, the hope is going to be there'll be less and less and less as time passes. So Beit Shammai, who focuses on Sur Meira, looks at fire as the eradicator of evil, symbolically. Therefore, he connects it to the Parei HaChag, which is the diminution of external evil. But once again, this too may express Beit Shammai as an idealist. Because the idealist says, you got a problem, just correct it. Right? Nancy Reagan used to say about drugs, just say no. But Beis Hillel says, that doesn't work for a lot of us. For a lot of us, to confront the negatives within ourselves engenders within us depression, hopelessness. We lose the motivation to change because we think it's impossible. We think it's too difficult. So Beis Hillel says, if you're using fire, the metaphor of fire, your neshama, as a strategy for change, instead of focusing on your negatives and burning them away, take and identify your strengths and open them up. Fire as the generator of light and warmth. This is the tshuva of Asei Tov. Like David HaMelech says, Sur Meira Asei Tov. Beit Shammai is Sur Meira. Beit Hillel is Asei Tov. And Beit Hillel's philosophy is, by building up the goodness within yourself, the negatives will take care of themselves, because light drives away the darkness. You cannot take a baseball bat and hit darkness. But darkness is dispelled by the light that you generate. And therefore, now you understand very perfectly, Beit Shammai's analogy to the Parei HaChag is, Parei HaChag is the destruction of external evil, the Nerot Chanukah is the destruction of internal evil. Beis Hillel says, well, maybe we're not strong enough to fight internal evil, but let's take the goodness that is within us and build on it and capitalize. Now, it's tempting to say, although this is a gross and unfair oversimplification, that this is the machlokas between Chassidus and Musar. That Musar is very, very concerned with looking at our flaws and identifying them and attacking them and working on them. Chassidus, again, this is an oversimplification, absolutely, focuses on looking at your goodness and building on it. So, of course, the Sfas Emes himself was a great Chassidish Rebbe. He was the second Gera Rebbe. So it's interesting that the way the Sfas Emes explains, the Chassidish approach is Beis Hillel, and the Musar approach is Beit Shammai. But once again, this also ties into the idealist versus the actualist, because in the ideal world, Beit Shammai is actually right. A person should be strong enough to look into themselves and exercise self-control and self-mastery. So in the ideal sense, Beit Shammai is the stronger way of changing yourself. You don't get depressed. You just say, this is my job, I'm going to do it. Kirk Douglas, wrote an autobiography, and in the beginning he writes about his father, who was not religious. His father was a Russian immigrant. But he tells a story about his father that's quite remarkable, and I think his father could have been a Baal Musar had he had the right chinuch and the light. He said his father was a heavy smoker, as you know, Russians tended to be. And when he had first heard that smoking may not have been healthy, he stopped immediately. And he used to make a point of carrying a cigarette in his pocket at all times, his shirt pocket. And whenever he had the urge to smoke, he would pull out the cigarette and say to the cigarette, "You think you're stronger than me? You think you're going to give me orders? I am stronger than you. You're not the boss." That is truly actually a Musar. That is actually a Musar story, because that highlights the koach of free will and self-control and discipline. He could have been Mashgiach in Panovich or whatever. In fact, I don't want to be Motzi Laz and Gedolei Yisrael, but Rav Dessler actually has, in all his great honesty and humility, he has a story about how he failed to stop smoking for a long time because he couldn't hold back. Rav Dessler writes, Mechtim Eliyahu, he couldn't, he was nichshol. Again, this is his great humility to tell us this. So, that's Beis Shammai. Stare at your problems and just overcome them. What's the problem? But Beis Hillel says, we're not always so strong. And sometimes the way we do tshuva is by building up our spiritual muscles in a positive way. And then the ra gets less powerful, because mitzvah gereres mitzvah. Right? So that's interesting. So be it as it may, though, the Beis Halevi does connect the two reasons of Beis Hillel to these different halachos. The Mishnah Berurah apparently breaks the connection. The one question I didn't answer, which I'm not going to answer, but I'll just throw it out to you to remember it as a question, is what is the makor of the Ramah? The Ramah says everybody lights their own menorah, because if you're doing mahadrin mina mahadrin, you still do mahadrin. The parenthesis says the source is the Rambam, but it's not the Rambam, because the Rambam says the Baal HaBayit lights for everybody. The Ramah says everybody lights their own. So the question that I'm going to leave unanswered, maybe I'll mentioned it post Hanukkah, is what is the makor of the Rambam Shita? Tosvos says only one menorah is lit. The Rambam says the Baal HaBayit lights for everybody. Where is the makor of everybody lighting their own? Okay, anyway, I wish you a happy and joyous Hanukkah. Chag Purim Sameach. And,